weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Thanks to David and Lottie. It is Wednesday, the 12th of June, and this is Game On. Well, it's day 6 at the European Athletics Championships in Rome, and our women's 4x400m relay are going for gold. Ina Reardon will set the scene for us. Conan Byrne joins us to reflect on last night's Ireland defeat to Portugal and continue our build-up to the Euros. We'll have the latest Gaelic Games news with Damien Lawler, and Gary Moran and Doug Ferguson will preview the US Open live from North Carolina. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552. We're on X at Game On 2FM. Or you can WhatsApp us on 087 187 9200.
Game On on 2FM.
Now, welcome along. We have a lot to get through this evening, but we are going to start in the only place that we should start, and that is at the Athletics European Championships. Ina Reardon joins us now from Rome. How are you, Ian?
Yes, good evening, Marie. Just heading down to the Stadio Olimpico as we speak, so apologies for some background noise there.
That's all right. We don't mind if you're in Rome heading down there. We can live with that. It's been an amazing championship. So we're going to get on to tonight's action in just a moment. But just first, Ian, your reflections on it, because you've covered so many of them in your career.
Yeah, I have to say, I've been quite blessed to have covered, I think, every edition of these championships going back to 1998, when Sonia famously won her 2 gold medals in Budapest, winning the 5 and the 10. You mentioned it's day 6 here, but I don't ever remember a championship where you've had so much Irish interest over 6 consecutive days, right up to the final event tonight in both the women's 4x4 and the men's 1500 metres and men's 1000 metres. So there's definitely more to come this evening, but certainly 3 medals so far, which is equals the record going back to 1998. Can they win 4? I think they'll be very close tonight. I wouldn't be putting it around their necks just yet, the women's 4x4, obviously. I think there's going to be 3 very close teams between Ireland and the Netherlands, obviously, and then Poland. And then you just can't rule out any teams in the relay. But certainly, if they all run to form, and just by way of confirmation, Rashida Adeleke will definitely run the second leg tonight, and Charlene will run the anchor leg again. Sophie Becker leading off, and then Phil Healy on the third leg. So that's a full strength Irish women's team. So they'll be ready for it. It's a beautiful evening here. It's warm. It's still. It's exactly what you'd want for a 400 metres relay, and I think it's going to come down to, a bit like we saw in the mixed relay perhaps, it'll be 2 or 3 teams in contention coming into the straight, but I do think the Dutch team with Femke Bol back on board, we saw her last night win the 400 metre hurdles in the championship record. She's going to come back tonight on the anchor leg for the Dutch team, and she's just a phenomenal athlete. I think it's going to be very difficult to beat her, but Ireland will certainly be in the mix for that medal, and it's going to be very exciting.
Yeah, really well. And just on the, I guess, the length of the championships and the fact that a couple of our athletes, Rashida and Charlene, have been in action quite a number of times over the last few days, do you think that that's going to have an effect on them physically?
Yeah, good question. I think this will be Charlene's 5th race, I think, in 6 days, if that makes sense. Yeah, and a 4th race, obviously, for Rashida. She didn't run the heat yesterday morning. So, of course, that takes a toll. As I say, I'm losing track today here myself, and I'm not even down on the track running. So it must be, and it's not even the race. It's getting to the stadium, it's getting back, and then you have the medal ceremonies in between all that, which are quite late at night as well. So it's all of that is definitely going to be a factor tonight, whether it'll be fresh enough to go again. They came very close to their Irish record yesterday, the second fastest time ever in qualifying, and of course they go in tonight ranked fastest, but again, as I say, things will shake up considerably when the Dutch change around a few of their athletes and the Polish team too, but I do think that might be the one factor that I'd be concerned about, is the fact that it's the 5th race for Charlene on the anchor leg. She ran a 49 split again yesterday morning, which was phenomenal running, but she just seems to have these superpowers of recovery when it comes to the relay. Once that baton goes off into her hands, she just seems to have this incredible energy, and I do think they'll be definitely thereabouts, because the key strategy here is that Rashida will run the second leg and obviously put them in the lead. I mean, there's no doubt they're going to take over in the lead on the third leg. And then Phil Healy, who ran well again yesterday, she's very experienced. So the most important thing for her is to hold her nerve and hold her cool. And I think if she passes off to Charlene in a good position, then the medal is definitely on. But whether it's going to be gold or not, I'm really not so sure.
And Phil is so determined as well. I heard her interviewed over the weekend, and she was so disappointed with her individual performance. So to shine in the relay would mean so much to her, Ian.
Yes, no, it has been. I mean, she's been around a long time, and this is a full strength Irish team. And Sophie Becker as well, very experienced, 27-year-old. She's been she's been on the scene a while, so it's their chance tonight. And as I say, I think the medal is there. And if it's a fourth medal for Ireland in 6 days, that would be a phenomenal achievement. And I, as I say, quick shout out as well for Andrew Coskren later on in 1500 metres. I mean, he's in that final. Normally it's a 12-man final, which can be tight enough, but there was a bit of carnage in one of the semi-finals on Monday where four of the runners fell. So for some reason or another, they've all been reinstated for the final on appeal. So you now have a 17-man final, which is asking for trouble, in my opinion. Jacob Ingebrigtsen being the standout runner there, he's going to be almost impossible to beat. But Andrew's in the mix, and I think if he can hang on for the last 200 metres, you just don't know what he might produce. And that's just so there's a potential for two medals tonight. And even the men's 10,000 metres later on, we've got Ephraim Gadez in there. He's not going to be too far off a shout either, I think, in the men's 10,000 metres. It's a warm night for running. He won't mind that. So there could be a few more surprises tonight, I suspect, before we're done.
Yeah, so that 10,000 metres goes off at 8:44 p.m. You mentioned Ephraim there, Brian Fay, Peter Lynch, Cormac Dalton and Barry Keane in that. And then at 9:26 is Andrew Coskren in that 1,500 metre final. And just to reflect on the championships as a whole and I guess the development of Irish athletics now, it feels, Ian, and you'll be better placed than I will be to comment on this, but it does feel like it's moving in the right direction.
Yeah, well, as you say, I mean, go back over the years, we've been very lucky to have won medals. I think the only year we didn't win medals in the last sort of 20 years or so was 2012. I think it was in Helsinki where Fionnuala McCormack finished fourth in the 10,000 metres. But we've won medals every edition since. But I think it was possibly one or two standout athletes. You would have had Dervla O'Rourke, obviously, and then Sonia before that, and then maybe a Thomas Farr or a Kieran McGeehan. But now you have the depth of athletes. It's the depth of athletes in a range of events, from obviously the relays to the sprints. I mean, what Rashida did here in her final was incredible running as well. So I think it's more the depth of athletes we have now, which is the most exciting thing. And that hasn't happened overnight. That's been coming for a while. I think if you go back to even 2 years ago in Munich, when obviously you had Kieran McGeehan won silver, Mark English would have won bronze. So there's always been kind of one or two athletes, but maybe covered up the cracks before, but I think the depth now from relays, sprints, distance running is certainly unprecedented. But I think that will continue for a while. Like, there's no reason to suspect that's going to suddenly drop off again.
And where's the depth coming from, Ian? Is it things like better structures, more accessibility to clubs? What is it?
Well, I think it's kind of a natural progression, that in the sense that if you look at someone like Rashida, I mean, she's come through the Irish system. She was born and raised in Dublin, came through an Irish club in Tallaght. But I think the critical decision for her was going to college in America. And people say, why did she go to college in America? I don't think it reflects any lack of facilities or coaching expertise in Ireland, but it was more just the competition she's going to get over there, and just the quality of athletes she's been racing against week in, week out over there. So when she comes through like something like a European Championships here, it's nothing new. Same with Kieran McGeehan. She came through the Irish system here, went to UCD, and has since moved to Manchester just to put herself in that training, a sort of quality elite training group, which is going to bring you on again. So it's kind of natural progression, but it's very hard for me to fault the Irish system right now. I think in terms of funding and facilities, I think we've more running tracks in the country now than we've obviously ever had before. So it's a combination of all those things, but just certainly, I think in Kieran McGeehan's case, if you look at her winning a gold medal here on Sunday night, that was a combination of all the things she's been through, the near misses, finishing second, third, and fourth before. So it was a combination of all those emotions rolled into one for her, which is critical when it comes to a championship race. And as she said herself, she wanted it the most, and that comes only from whatever she's been, nearly 20 years now in the sport of trying to get to the top of that podium, and hopefully not for the last time quite yet.
And we'll be looking ahead to the Olympics as soon as these are over. I'd say we'll be starting to build up to that. But just from Rashida's perspective, and there's so much expectation and excitement about what she can deliver, but the relays now are becoming a huge factor as well, because there's so much interest in them and we have potential in them. How do you think she's going to balance all the demands on her at an Olympic Games, Ian?
Yeah, well, a bit like being here myself. I'm kind of taking you one step at a time. get through Rome first, and then we'll think about Paris, because it's been one of those weeks where you just have to take each day as it comes. You can't get ahead of yourself. But you're absolutely right to ask that question. Paris is going to be a completely different ball game, especially when it comes to that mixed relay. And I've been saying this from way back. The mixed relay is on the first day, and then the final is on the second day, and then obviously Rashida will have to run the heat because there's no buys in the Olympics. Like, here she got a buy into the semi-final, so did Charlene, which is a critical reason why they both bypass, when I vote around the mixed relay as opposed to maybe not doing that. So Paris is going to be very different. And I think, and I've had this conversation with some of my colleagues here, it's very difficult to see how Rashida is going to run the mixed relay on the first 2 days of the Olympic Games and then come back a day later for her individual 400 metres. But that's just you'd expect that in the Olympics. So I think the expectations there obviously will be very different. If they make the final, there is certainly the possibility she might run the straight final. Mm-hmm. But I really think it's going to be her priority, Charlene's priority come Paris will have to be the individual 400 metres. That does mean they can come back later in the week for the 4x4, which obviously later tonight might give a better indication of what's capable there. But as I say, I don't think they've given it too much thought yet, honestly. I think they're just going to get through this week. And even Rashida said herself, she's been kind of just training through this week. She hasn't really tapered off. And to run a 49.07 without tapering off, which you probably saw the quote, would have won her 5 of the 6 last Olympics finals. Amazing. In the 400 metres. So
yeah.
That's the kind of shape she's in. The 2 fastest European times this century. You got to go back to Marie Jose Perec back in 1996 to find a faster European time. So this is the quality of running she's produced. And certainly, like, if you'd asked me if Rashida was going to run 49.07 beforehand, and that's a cliche, I would have said yes, she will win the gold medal with that. Unfortunately, Tashmin Rathcam's out and runs a 48.98, so she was just beaten by that slightly better athlete on the night. But absolutely everything about Rashida's decision to come here to test herself, to see where she's at, I think has proven right. And dare I say, I think not winning the gold medal might give her a little bit more hunger for the next few weeks going back into training, when she knows now, look, I'm nearly there. I just need to do a little bit more work, and then hopefully there's a 48-second cocking in me, which will be required to win a medal in Paris.
Yeah, because she's still so young. So I know we talk about people having limitless potential, but how much does she have?
Well, at 21, again, like, I'm comparing her to Kasia Rack, a 26-year-old from Poland. Like, she's a seasoned runner. She was second in the World Championships last year. She was second in the European Championships 2 years ago. Like, she's been on the stage before, and she was thinking, this is my gold medal chance here. I'm not going to suddenly bow down to a 21-year-old who's coming on the scene. So that was her own incentive, and I think we have to respect that from her point of view. But of course, like, when you come here at 21 and win, obviously that was Rashida's second medal to go with the mixed relay, there's a very strong chance she's going to win another medal tonight. So 3 medals at 21 is an incredible achievement for her. And there was some doubt whether these European Championships, I think, in Olympic year, would they be worthwhile. But every night we've seen it. We saw it last night with Carson Warholm. We saw it with Femke Ball. We saw it in Tambury in the high jump. As I mentioned, Ingebrigtsen is here. I think most of the main Olympic contenders are here in Rome, and because they all know this is the perfect dress rehearsal. This is where you want to sort of see where you're at, if everything's going to plan, what needs tweaking, what's not working. But from Rashida's point of view, I think it's been a hugely valuable exercise. And I think if she comes home with another medal tonight, that will certainly be the perfect dress rehearsal for Paris.
Yeah, it really would. And it's getting so many eyeballs as well, and people interested. And I know the Olympics, when they come round, everybody tunes in. But it's great to have that bit of extra attention on a sport that maybe doesn't get the spotlight all year round as well, Ian.
Yeah, well, I've never quite bought into that idea that athletics is a minority sport. I think probably more than any sport, people can relate to it. And I've heard it said now before that what is it about even the mixed relay that suddenly has captured people's interest? And look, it is a new event. I mean, there's no doubt it's only, this is the first time it was actually on the European programme. It's been the Olympics now, but this will be the second time we've had it in Paris. But it's like the perfect four-lap race where you can kind of focus on who's in the lead, who's not in the lead, where they need to go to win. So there's no rules involved really beyond getting the baton around within the certain changeover zone. So it's definitely captured people's interest there. And we'll see it again tonight, the women's 4x4. As I say, there's 8 teams in there, and the old cliche with the championship finals, anything can happen. There were 2 men's teams disqualified in the men's 4x4 yesterday, so you've got to be very careful with those changeovers. But it's a very experienced Irish team. I've no doubt they'll be right where they need to be going into that last leg with Charlene. And then it becomes that, can she run down Femke Ball in the last 100 metres? I'd love to see it happen. I'm not so sure it will, but there's certainly potential there for Ireland to get back on the podium again, would be a fantastic way to finish the championships.
Oh, it really would. And we've seen this weekend gone and over the last few days, just that anything can happen over there. So hopefully we'll have more success this evening. Ian O'Riordan, thank you so much.
Thanks very much, Marie.
Thanks. Talk to you soon. We're going to turn our attention now to football, and Conan Byrne joins us on the line. How are you, Conan?
Not too bad, Marie. How are you?
Good, excited about the Euros and even more excited after watching Portugal last night, albeit not as an Irish football fan because there was such a gulf between the two teams. But I am looking forward to see how Portugal do in the European Championships. I wasn't expecting Ronaldo to have such a big impact, but I guess it probably wouldn't be the first time I've underestimated somebody because of their advancing years, but he was very impressive. Just first of all, Conan, your thoughts on Ireland-Portugal last night?
I think you said it there with the gulf in class. That was expected. That's right before the Euros as well, where Portugal are going in as one of the favourites for the competition. So those players are going to be wanting to put in a bit of a performance for Roberto Martinez, because that's the job that he has now, is to pick a team, and those personalities, that's going to be his biggest challenge. So they were all biting at the bit to try and put on a performance, and they did that. And unluckily for us, Ireland were on the receiving end of that. Having said that, I didn't think we played particularly well as a team, as a cohesive unit, especially in the midfield area. But like time and time again, like I've talked to you about, Marie, on numerous occasions, about it all comes down to infrastructure in terms of government and payments and all that. It's our players are playing at championship level. I think we had one player from the midfield to forward line that was playing in the Premier League in Will Smallbone. And you can't come up against the Portuguese team and expect to get a result when you have players on the pitch that aren't playing at the highest level. It's just impossible. So you can talk about managers and until the cows come home, but it just won't happen without good, proper infrastructure investment in our game, from grassroots to domestic, right up until international setups. But until that happens, which won't be for another decade at least, these results will happen, unfortunately.
It's funny, Conan, because I'm hearing that so often, but it doesn't feel like anybody's listening. Anybody that has the power to change, to make a difference, to invest, to allocate funds, to look at academies, see what needs to be fixed. Do you think we're ever going to get there? Because last night was really sobering.
Yeah, well, look, that's what I mean. It's up to the powers that be, that what they want. And it's up to us now as football fans to try and push it with our local representatives, local TDs and government ministers to try and push this, because if we don't, we're just going to be left behind. And we already are at that stage anyway. Like the likes of when we had met poor, well, we say poor results against the likes of Luxembourg, Armenia, Georgia, but these are nations that have put a huge investment into their own football academies and infrastructures where we haven't. So they're going to get the benefits of that, and we're just going to be the whipping boys of Europe. I can see that happening because we're not investing in our game. And we're relying on the grandparent rule a lot. And by all means, if we didn't have that, where would we be? Mm-hmm. So it's beggars belief how something hasn't changed, something hasn't happened over the last number of years. But like you said, we've been crying out for this for the last number of years now. We don't have enough full-time coaches in League of Ireland academies. We don't have them enough in grassroots football. The amount of pro-licensed coaches that we have in this country that are out of work. So they're useless qualifications at the moment because of that. And there should be infrastructures in place to put them back into work, whether it be in schools, local football clubs, or League of Ireland academies. And that's where investment comes from, and that's where it needs to happen.
Just looking at last night then, Conan, is it a case, and I've actually been following a debate online about it today, do we have players that can compete? Like, can we get our team to set up in a way that we can have more of an effect on the game, whether that's been tough to beat, been hard to break down? I know James McLean said we need to be a little bit more nasty. Is that simplifying things a little bit too much to think that we should be able to at least put in a performance against teams like Portugal?
You see, that I think so, and I think that's just the easy thing to say as well. Like, when you have the likes of Manchester City, and the amount of times you see Premiership footballers trying to be hard to beat against that team, and you have the likes of Phil Foden and Grealish and Haaland and players like that can just turn it on, and Bernardo Silva that can just play De Bruyne that can play a simple pass and against Premiership footballers, international footballers, and then you expect then at international level for Ireland, who have championship footballers and players that play in maybe the Scottish Premier League, and no disrespect to these players, these are very, very good footballers, but we're just not at the same level. So yes, you can set up your team and you can make us hard to beat all you want, but at the same time, you want to be competitive, and we haven't been for the last number of years, And it hasn't been Martin O'Neill's fault. It hasn't been Mick McCarthy's fault. It hasn't been Stephen Kenny's fault. And it's not John O'Shea's fault. It's government's fault. And that's where I firmly believe where we should be talking and where we should be discussing. Yes, you could talk about the team and the setup. We made a few mistakes in certain aspects of our play last night. Didn't control possession when we had it. We don't have a centre forward like Robbie Keane that will get us out of jail. There was a couple of chances, half chances last night for Tom Cannon and Adam Ida. And I've no doubt Robbie Keane would have put them away if he had been in his peak. But we don't have those players anymore. We don't have the players of yesteryear from the 90s and the 80s that were playing at Liverpool, Aston Villa, top Manchester United, top teams in Premier League football. We don't have those players anymore. And yet we expect as a nation to compete at the highest level. It's just not realistic, Murray. And we just need to, no matter what, we need to, first of all, sort out a manager. I think that's very important. And then go from there. We have a huge game now against England in September. Not looking forward to it. Mm-hmm. But we always do our fight. We always fight our hardest against them. So who knows? But yeah, it's paper over the cracks at the moment, and it has been for the last number of years.
Do you think we'll have a permanent manager by September?
Oh, gee, I really hope so. I expect one very close, very soon after the Euros, if I'm being completely honest. I firmly believe it's going to be Willie Sanyos for some reason. I don't know why. I think with his repertoire and how he's done it with Georgia. Similar nations in terms of quality of player, and look what he's done with them. Got them to Euro through a penalty shootout win over Greece, first time in their history. Like the way they play. Yes, they have one or two absolutely wonderful players as well that can help. But I just think the delay has got. It's obviously they have somebody in mind, Marie. And I just think it's because Willie Sanyos was mentioned so much before Georgia actually got to the Euros. But I'm just thinking that's going to be him. But I hope John O'Shea sticks around as well.
Yeah, I hope that they actually have somebody in mind and that it's not a case of let's see who's out of the job after the Euros. Anyway, let's move on to our Euros chat now. Can't believe it came around so quick, but it has. And it's going to get underway on Friday. I enjoyed watching Portugal last night because I do think they're in with a great shout. Who's your tournament favourite, Conan?
Yeah, it probably will be Portugal. I just think, like, and a lot of people are kind of discounting them. I think it's probably because of Roberto Martinez's history as Belgian manager and
how he was,
so uncompetitive in the 2022 World Cup, eliminated at the group stages. But I don't think it's going to be the same for Portugal. I think the caliber of players is much better. They've definitely got more strength and depth. And like I said earlier on, I think it's how he's going to manage the team and those personalities in the dressing room. That's going to be his biggest challenge. But like they have best record in qualifications. They won all their games. They scored 36 goals in those games and only conceded two. And like it's a potential Portugal-Germany semi-final, like mouth-watering already scenario. Like, but like you just even look, like there's some teams that you look at, like the likes of England. I don't think I don't know how they're tournament favourites. I think defensively they're weak. I think they could be got at by a number of the stronger nations. But with Portugal, like you have Diogo Dalot, who was Manchester United's player of the season. He was superb over the last few months. Ruben Dias, Joao Cancelo, Nuno Mendes from PSG, left back, very good. Nelson Semedo as well. And then their midfield, like Vitinha, PSG, is a very underrated player, performed excellently for them this season. Bruno Fernandes, Bernardo Silva, Joao Palhinha, like the list goes on. Like, and all these players can't play. You'd like a loan move to Ireland, wouldn't you, Marie? Grab a few players in. But and then up top, then you have the main man in Ronaldo. And like you said, people have written him off. I've written him off so many times. Even when he went to Saudi Arabia, you're thinking, like, that has to be it. But most games played at the Euros, most caps of any player, 207. Like, if he scores in the Euros, he's going to be the oldest player to score in the competition. And going to be six competitions that he's played in. Like, an incredible achievement. And who deny him a victory and lift the trophy at the end of it.
Yeah, I agree, actually. He just keeps coming back when you think that he won't. He still does it. So who's your dark horse then?
You know, I love those.
You do.
I don't know. Like, there's been a few. I was fancying Hungary before we came up against them. Just the fact that they went unbeaten in 14 games. Marco Rossi has like beaten England at Wembley and beaten Germany 1-0 as well in Germany. And they're defensively very sound against the stronger opposition, and they're extremely disciplined. So that's maybe why I feel that Hungary have an outside chance, definitely, of getting through their group. And I like the way Szoboszlai plays in that Hungarian team. Seamus Coleman obviously got into his head last week massively, but I really like the way they play as a unit. And I think Hungary definitely will get out of their group. Whether they get very far in their competition, I'm not necessarily sure. But I suppose another dark horse then, probably maybe Denmark. Top qualifying group, better head-to-head with Slovenia, who are at the top of the group. The only problem is there is that you're relying on Rasmus Højlund, to a 21-year-old. This is his chance to shine, I feel. I think he will need to perform to push Denmark through the group stages anyway. And if he gets through there, who knows what might happen. But like, I'm not going to say Belgium are a dark horse, because Belgium are Belgium. They have some wonderful players defensively, again, not great. But I do think it's going to be a last four of top teams. I can't see, like I said during the World Cup, like a Morocco getting through through those earlier rounds. I can't see that happening this time around with any of the teams that have, like Turkey possibly, but no, I think it's going to be a strong semi-final, and I'm really looking forward to the competition, Maria. It's going to be great.
Our golden boot?
I'm going to go for Ronaldo. Just because I think Portugal are going to go all the way, and he's not going to be left out, is he? Considering his form at the moment, again scoring for fun in Saudi Arabian league, two goals last night, two expertly taken goals as well. So because I think they're going to go far in the competition, I'm going to say Ronaldo. Even Moani off France possibly as a dark horse golden boot. I think Deschamps really likes him. I think he's a very, very good technical gifted player as well. He's tall, he's strong, he's athletic, and if he can get on the end of some of those crosses from Dembele or Mbappe, I think Mouani has a good chance as well.
Okay, enjoy Conan, no doubt I'll be talking to you over the next few weeks, because so many games, so much to talk about. We're going to take a very quick break. Do stay with us though. We'll be chatting to Damien Lawler about all the Gaelic Games news after these. Welcome back. I'm delighted to say that Damien Lawler joins me on the line to talk all things Gaelic Games. Damien, how are things?
Good stuff, Marie. All going well, thank God.
And pretty busy as well. Lots of news lines over the last couple of days. Let's start with the Caseman Park one, because that hit the headlines today, that the GAA president, Jarlath Burns, admitted that Caseman Park is unlikely to be ready to host Euro 2028 matches. And he's described his outlook as very pessimistic. How big a blow is this for the future of Caseman Park?
It's a colossal blow for the immediate term, Annie Marie. The thinking and the hope would be that Caseman Park will still be developed and developed for the home of Ulster GEA and get it done as soon as possible. As we've spoken about on the show many, many times before over the last decade, it's been besieged with issues in terms of planning objections and challenges and hurdles. You know, the diggers have been in, the ground is, the levelling off work has started, everything is set in place, but, you know, for my own description of it, I think it became a political football in terms of who was going to fund the rest of it. The UK government were still waiting for them to come back and commit the definite final amount. There was no sign of that coming. UEFA want the grounds up and running 12 months ahead of the tournaments. So this is looking increasingly unlikely that the Caseman Park will be up operational 12 months ahead of that deadline. That will result in a £106 million loss to the Northern Ireland economy, and a pro rata loss of £255 million for Northern Ireland in general. You know, it's a colossal blow in the short term. Five games were meant to be held there. Caseman Park was one of 10 UK and Irish venues that would host the championships. And I think we all know that in terms of funding Caseman, the Irish government has stepped up £43 million. I think, you know, the GEA had made their own contribution. There was calls on them to make more. Everybody's kind of waiting to see what the UK government pledge would be. With election time coming there, the ball has stopped rolling on that one, Marie. Everybody's at a loss to know what's happening. I think the project will be fine going forward, but in terms of the championships, for the European championships, it's a major, major blow if it doesn't go ahead. I don't believe they've given up complete hope in it yet. It's looking pessimistic, Dunmurry, and that's an awful shame. It would have been a massive, massive event for the region, a massive event for the island, and it would have been what an opener for Casement Park as well.
And just for Gaelic Games itself, like, how badly needed is this development, Damien?
Well, look, I mean, for the last few years, Clonus has been the main regional venue for Ulster GAA Games. You have lovely grounds like the Athletic grounds in Armagh and a lovely park in Newry as well. You know, you've got good grounds everywhere. Tyrone have three venues that are capable of hosting inter-county games. But quite simply, there would be, you know, Clonus stands on its own on Ulster final day. But in terms of the city venue, infrastructurally, Casement Park would have been at a different level altogether. It would have regenerized and regenerated the area. There's no doubt about that, in my opinion. It will do those things in time, but I just feel that it's suffered enough over the last decade or more. This was a massive, massive boost. The enthusiasm, the goodwill, you know, what it would have done for all sides of the border, all sides of the divide. And unfortunately, momentum looks to have stalled now at the moment. Now, Ulster GAA will have a statement out this evening. It'll be interesting to see what their thoughts are. But they've remained clinical about this going forward all the time. And I think they'll stick to their guns. And the priority now that a Casement has to be functioning for Ulster GAA, for Ulster GAA primarily. And then they can maybe get that up and running and worry about what comes afterwards. But certainly, they're facing an uphill battle now to get it done in time for the European Championships.
Yeah, and it just feels like it's been dragging on for so long, Damien, that the deadline of the Euros was probably great to have, but when that's taken away, it's hard to see when it's going to get there.
Yeah, it's certainly when there's no definite line in the funding. I mean, there have been calls from the GAA to put more into the pot. There were calls for the Irish government to put more into the pot. There were calls for the UK government. Now, so far, the GAA have committed to €15 million and no more than that. Now, I mean, the GAA would be steadfast in the fact that Windsor Park and Kingspan Breffni Park for rugby and soccer both got funding, cross-border funding from the Northern Ireland Executive and Assembly. So Casement Park has not been helped by the breakdown of the executive for so long. It certainly has not been helped by the UK elections that are in place at the moment. And it became somewhere along the line, I think, a political football in terms of how much money the UK government would put forward to, you know, and they pledged to do so, but no sign of it coming yet. And momentum has been, you know, has been taken away, and it's yet another challenge for everybody involved to face and to deal with as well.
While we're on the topic of challenges, let's move on to the Football Review Committee, Damien, and their series of proposed trial rules that we're going to see over the coming weeks in some trial games. So just talk us through what we can expect to see if anybody gets to see what's going to happen in these trials.
Yeah, lots. Look, at they're throwing the kitchen sink at it, Marie, in terms of rules anyway. Like 4 points for a goal, extra point for a shot from outside a 40-metre arc, goalkeepers remaining inside the small rectangle, only receiving possession within the small rectangle if they're there. Jim Gavin and his committee have thrown the kitchen sink at it in terms of what is possible. They've changed the advance mark, the introduction of a new 40-metre arc as well, Marie. That will maybe excite people. Mm-hmm. Leaving three players, including the goalkeeper, in your own half at all times. That's another kind of an eye-opening move as well. And over the next 4 to 6 weeks, regional venues will host all these trials. They're not really called trials, they're called sandbox games. And the term sandbox games, incorporates the design of a new concept without consequence. So in other words, they didn't feel it was necessary or necessarily beneficial to try these rules in winter or colleges football. So they're going for it now. With teams who've been knocked out of the Tailteann Cup primarily, regional venues all over the country, four to five venues in the next 4 to 6 weeks. Different rules will be trialled on different days. It's a massive statement attempt from the Football Review Committee, but anybody who knows the way Jim Gavin works won't be surprised by that, Marie. So there's probably, it's a long way to go yet, but they're moving at a rate of knots, to be fair.
Yeah, they really are, and they've been very innovative as well. How have these proposals been received, though, by just the general football public?
I think they've met 19 times in just 100 days. So the first thing is probably the amount of energy and enthusiasm that's gone into it. They've been met with a good open response, to be honest with you. Now, the key question is, how many will actually make it through the filter that can be applied at all levels across the association, e.g. your kids' games, my kids' games, grassroots club where referees are not plentiful, indeed umpires are not plentiful. So it will have to be the very practical ones that that get filtered through. But I think everybody's interested to see what works well and what doesn't work well. And I think you're definitely going to see two or three coming through, Marie. It might take a year or two for that process to unroll, but like they're not sitting down. They're going across now to Connacht. They met, I believe, with the provincial councils recently. The roadshows are undergoing 5,000 survey responses. They're going to London to get the response over there. They're leaving no stone unturned. So I think it would be, if any negative reaction came out of this straight away, I don't think that's well placed. I think you have to admire the enthusiasm, the level, the comprehensive level of investigation that's gone into it. A high-powered committee chaired by a high-powered person. And I think there's nothing to be gained by being negative at the moment. And I think it's going to be a positive development. However, I'm not sure how many will actually get through. But, yeah. Jim Gavin will make sure, though, that whatever goes through is perfectly applicable for right across the association.
Yeah, I'd say some of them just would be hard enough to referee as well. That might be something.
Hard to police,
yeah. They probably might need to bring in a couple of extra referees if they do bring in some of them as well.
That could happen too.
Yeah, it might be a bad thing in general, though. And do we have a timeline on when they think that they will make a decision on these?
I think 2026 is the year that playing rule changes can come in. I think 2025. This year is not a playing rules change in the year. Next year is. So I think, within the next 12 months, I think they could be up and operational. So there is a bit to go in the process that Jim is overseeing at the moment. But again, that's not a bad thing. That gives you time to tweak everything and to trial everything. So I think, they're very enthused about it. A big briefing there with the print journalists last Friday. Everything's gone to Central Council. So one thing that they can't be accused of is not consulting right across the board.
Just one other thing, Damien, before we move on to the ladies' football as well. Is there a chance that the Aussie rules might end up coming back? And will it, if so, bring a women's series as well?
Well, I think if it comes back, it will bring a women's series. But I personally couldn't see a place on the calendar for Edinburgh. Mm. I think that there's calls for these sandbox games to be incorporated into a new look Railway Cup, but quite simply you're struggling to get your split season overall at the moment sorted out in terms of dual counties need 14 weeks to have their club championships run off, so you're running back from late October 14 weeks. I think what's going to happen is you might push back by 2 weeks. Intercounty season might be extended, but I can't see how you could fit in a concept like the Aussie Rules International Rules Series coming back in, as well received and as popular as it was. So fixture wise, something will have to give before a decision like that is made. But if it does come back, I'd say absolutely, with the advent of female players going to the WAFL, I think that you're going to see both.
Yeah, I'd actually love to see the female series. Hopefully they'll find somewhere for it, but as you said, it is really difficult. Let's move on to the Ladies Football Championship now. Loads of games last weekend, loads of games this weekend. Can't really look too far past Dublin, though, in their display against Mayo.
No, I mean, 5-2 at the break they led against Mayo, and then a comprehensive win, 1-10 to 5 points. People like Carla Rowe, Cuiva O'Connor, like defending champions, look fairly awesome, Marie, already. And you look at the runners-up then from the previous, the 2 years in recent history as well, Kerry. Mm-hmm. But I think they only drew at the weekend, and Suzanne White got a late goal for Donegal, and they'll be disappointed with that as well. Cork did very, very well against Leash to put 6 goals past them. Armagh are flying, they beat Meath 3-9 to, I think, to 1-4. Aoife McKay got a couple of great scores as well, but no, couldn't see too far past Dublin at all. Mick Bowen has what I'd call a relentless machine. They were probably upset at Meath's little mini resurgence. Well, it wasn't a mini resurgence, it was 2 great seasons, but they're all out to get them. So opening round, Marie, last weekend, great wins for Armagh, great wins for Cork, great wins for Dublin. Kerry drawn with Donegal, so they've got work to do as well. But look, it's exciting, but you couldn't see past Dublin at this stage for sure.
Damien Lawler, thank you so much, as always.
Thanks so much, Marie.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. It is the eve of the 124th US Open, which begins at Pinehurst in North Carolina tomorrow. And I'm delighted to say that Gary Moran joins us all the way from there. Gary, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, Marie. It's been an interesting couple of days out here. Course going to be very, very tough. Spoken to all the Irish players, really. Bar Tom McKibben, I have to say, he did some media on Monday and I was still on my way over. But Seamus Power, I did speak to, it's his ninth major, his first this season. He was tied for 12th in the US Open last year when 10 under was the winning score. Well, that's unlikely this year.
Yeah, obviously looking at the scores from 2014 before coming here and looking at the course setup, you knew it was going to be tough, but just seeing it in person and seeing like the extra rough that they have versus 2024, it's going to be a tough going. Round the greens is, you know, everyone's talking about it, but it is something else to see. It's very, it looks like no green wants to help you. It's always feeding away from the pin, so it's going to be a lot of tough work. It's going to be a mental grind, and looking forward to it. I've got a nice early start tomorrow, so hopefully that'll help.
And 9 early holes for the last 3 days as well, so yeah, that fits in right in with your sleep pattern and everything.
I mean, the pace of play in the practice rounds is miserable, so I always get out here kind of early, and you get a good feel for it, and you know, I can do my practice and stuff now and rest up in the afternoon. So, yeah, I said I'm all for those early starts, so I said I'd love to see it for Thursday.
Are you worried that, with given the weather forecast, which is for hot sunshine and no rain, that the greens may become almost unplayable?
I mean, I'm just hoping that USGA are watching the forecast as well. You know, it's, obviously I've played early, but the greens are very severe. There's just long, continuous slopes, and then it just ends up, I mean, you can... There's videos going around of yesterday someone dropping the ball on the green ended up 40 yards away off the green, you know. So it's they're going to have to be careful, and hopefully they're very aware, because I saw the forecast as well, and you can feel it really drying out, and it's going to get browner and it's going to get faster. So I'm hoping they're going to stay on top of it.
And your overall game, how satisfied are you with where you are in that point of view?
Yeah, it's really coming along. You know, I played nicely last week Memorial on a very tough course, like completely different type of tough, but just a tough layout, and some good results on tough course recently. So that's always a good sign. And, you know, the putter's starting to warm up. So, yeah, feeling really good.
And after this week, you don't know exactly what you're going to get in. It'll depend on how you do another tour. And so what are your plans for the rest of the PGA Tour season?
So I've got the Travelers next week in Connecticut. I'm going to have a week off now since I played in here. I'm going to play the John Deere in Iowa and then go across and play the Scottish. And hopefully I can play more into the Open before that. So we'll see. That's the plan for right now. But, you know, even last week I wasn't in this tournament, so some good golf can change, all sorts of stuff.
Irish Open, the PGA Tour will be done for the season. You'll be back for the Irish Open?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, really looking forward to it. I was lucky enough, I played Royal County down there 2 summers ago for the first time, and we got the nicest day ever, and it was just beautiful. So hoping we get some of that. I always feel like when I went back to school when I was young, it was good weather in September, so hoping for more of the same, like in the K Club last year. So yeah, amazing venue, and really looking forward to it. You know, Amgen being involved now as well, this is going to be, yeah, it should be a great event.
Just want to ask you one other thing. Scottie Scheffler, the run of form that he's on, can you give us your take on what Scottie's doing at the moment?
Honestly, it's remarkable. I don't even think it's getting the coverage that it probably should. It's unbelievable. I mean, was it 8 starts, 5 wins, 2 seconds, and an eighth with all everything that had go wrong for him at PGA? It's just, it's remarkable. And it's how he does it. He does so humbly that you almost don't realize how well he's doing it. And I mean, you saw it coming last year. I mean, his ball striking was off the charts last year, but obviously his putter didn't get going. And, you know, he made that change of putter, and it just seems to be amazing this year. It's just every week, doesn't seem to matter what type of golf course, what type of grass, he's up there. And he just seems to be very strong mentally. He has a great temperament for it, and obviously has the game. He has the physical game all over the place. So I think he's one of those funny ones that people get obsessed looking at his feet and they don't actually realize that his golf ball is on a string. And it's remarkable. It's impressive. And yeah, I mean, obviously everyone's going to try to stop him this week, but I'm sure he's hot favourite and he's going to be tough to beat.
So that was Seamus Power speaking to you, Gary. And I saw some of those greens that he mentioned the videos of, and they do look really bad.
Yeah, the greens are really, really difficult. I've seen them described as upturned cereal bowls. I've seen players out there practicing and, you know, struggling to... The targets are so small, and when they do fall away, it can go quite a distance away down into those native areas, not too far from the greens, but even really fiendish chips to get back up. Doug Ferguson, of course, has been out on the course as well, and does often, or almost always, I would say, for these majors for a decade or more. He joins us. Doug, that course setup, what do you think?
I was thinking about it the other day when they talk about there's an Open Championship and there's an Open Championship at St. Andrews. And I think it's very much the same way here at for the U.S. Open. There's oceans at Pebble Beach and toughness at Oakmont, but there's something special, different, unique about Pinehurst than, you know, the restoration to the sandscapes and the wire grass and all the native plants is one thing, but it is really all about the greens. That's the Donald Ross signature, and that's what this course has always been renowned for, and that's why only 4 players have broken par in 3 U.S. Opens. It's just really, really tough. And even in the rain, which was 2014 when Martin won it at 9 under par, only two other guys broke par for the week. And in soft conditions, it's just a beast, and it just demands so much precision. Not so much off the tee. It is pot luck. If you run off into those sandy areas, you could get stuck in a wire brush. You could be have a clear shot to the green, but it's just all about the green and being on the right side and being careful.
But Wyndham Clark mentioned it even on Monday as the defending champions press conference. Shane Lowry mentioned it to us yesterday evening. And the forecast is for a lot of heat, a lot of sunshine and no rain. Is there a danger? Is there a feeling that the course might get away from the USGA?
Well, you just said it, Gary, USGA. So there's always a danger of them screwing something up. But I actually asked John Bodenhammer that in the press conference. And he, you know, he thinks they'll start at 13 and be a little bit slower by the afternoon as the grass grows. I expect something to go wrong this week, especially with the heat. I would say, though, they did change grass, and I really don't pay that close attention to agronomy. But when you go to this strain of Bermuda they have, it allows to grow a lot better in the heat, and I think that's going to allow them to control it a little bit more than if it was still bent. But it's still the USGA, isn't it?
Yeah. And as we heard there at the end of Seamus Power, Scottie Scheffler, like, he's on a run that since Tiger Woods was in his pump, this, I don't think it's been, and like, not even when Rory 2012, 2014, this is different.
It is. And you, if you look at the quality of his wins, well, you can look at the fact that his worst finish was 17th in Palm Springs, which is not that terrible, and everything else has been top 10, but the fact that he's won the Masters and he's won the Players Championship and then three signature events against the strongest fields on the U.S. Tour, he's just relentless. I think that's the word that Rory used the other day, and it really is accurate. He's relentless, and he's also present. I like the word humble, frankly. He just goes about his business, comes to each tournament like he's done nothing. He celebrates for 2 minutes, and it's on to the next one. And it's not in a domineering like Tiger used to, you know, I'm going to go kill the world, and then he did. And Scottie just is kind of a quiet assassin and a pretty decent guy. I would say this, Gary, if he wins the next two majors, and there's a long way to go and there's a lot of talent and players, if he does, that Louisville Police Department's going to be under more scrutiny than they ever were.
Yeah, well, who might challenge him here this week? Who do you see as his most likely challengers?
Schauffele, just based on form, because the one thing the revamped major schedule has done is it allows for someone to get on a heater just because they're so stacked right up against each other. He'll always get my attention. Rory with the flight of his ball, I think he might have a decent chance of keeping it on the green and where you need to be. And my dark horse actually might be a Justin Thomas. And the only reason I say that is there is so much subtle movement about this golf course, and Justin is at his best when he just sees a shot and hits it without thinking too much about it. And be a dark horse, though. You wouldn't have said dark horse with Justin Thomas 2 years ago, but you'd have to say it now. But I think it all starts with Scottie, doesn't it?
My query with Rory, and at home, some of the tournaments I'm just following on Shotling, he's 115 yards from the green, and occasionally he'll throw in a bogey from 115 yards from the green. And the precision you need here with your wedges is so precise that you still have him up there among the very close favorites to Scottie.
It just depends on how he plays, and it is. You're right, Gary. It is all about the wedges, because you could be 170 or 110, and it feels like it's the same degree of difficulty. Just because you can't miss, and not missing, I wouldn't say it's almost guaranteed bogey, but once you miss a green, you're under an awful lot of stress. And when you multiply that by 18 holes and by four rounds, it's a lot.
Colin Morikawa is on a streak of form, not with the big win, but very similar to Xander.
He is. His weakness has always been chipping and putting, which are key around here and how you play the shots. But, you know, Colin's played in the final group of two majors this year. And he's come very close. He played such good golf at Memorial, which was completely different from Pinehurst, obviously. But the sheen and the greens and the firmness and the wind and everything about Memorial on Sunday was one of the strongest tests I've seen. And for Colin to challenge Scottie every step of the way was extraordinary golf. And I think that's another excellent look for the week.
And any outsiders, one I saw, and I'm only saying it because he leads in strokes gained around the green, surprisingly, Hideki Matsuyama.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say Tiger. Okay, good. Enough of that. Yeah, Hideki is a supreme ball striker. And again, a lot of his is putting, which kind of comes and goes. But yeah, I could see Hideki there easily.
Anyone else?
Not without thinking. It's the U.S. Open. Sometimes you get these weird, like, we were here in 05. We had Jason Gore and Olin Brown. That was the year that Retief shot 80 and a bunch of other guys shot 80. Michael Campbell, you know, an Open qualifier, holding off Tiger the way he did. You know, even, if, and then again, Martin ran away from everybody and he had the soft conditions to do it, and it was still great golf. You know, Eric Compton, he had a guy on his third heart, you know, finishing second that year. We'll get a surprise this week. I just don't know who it's going to be yet.
Well, for sure, the U.S. Opens in recent times at Pinehurst have thrown up really exciting finishes. And thanks very much for joining us, Doug.
Thanks, Gary.
Thanks for that, Gary. And Doug, a surprise would be great. We're all about surprises when it comes to sport. Well, that is all we have time for this evening. Don't forget that the Irish 4x400 metre relay, the women's relay, are in action at 8:05, and there is live coverage on RTE2 television. So do tune in for that, and hopefully we'll finish off the championship with more medals. That is it for us. Bette De Silva is up next.
RTE 2FM.